We consider a library's special collections today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Emma Lincoln is here today to tell us about a special part of Augustana's library on Scribble. Special collection sounds special.
Well, it is. I spent a lot of time there, actually, when I was in doing local history.
Well, that's because you're a special person.
Well, plus, I just loved, you know, being down there. It's like an old-fashioned library, and you know, with books and manuscripts everywhere. So I really had a good time down there.
What goes into special collections, Emma?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. We collect a variety of materials. You could consider special collections to be split roughly in two, and the one main part would be our book collection. That, of course, includes rare books, but also includes books on Augustana-related topics, books written by or about Augustana faculty. Let's see, books about local history, so Quad Cities or the Upper Mississippi Valley region. And then books about books that are in many ways reference sources for me to use in my daily work. So that's the one piece. The other main piece would be the manuscript collections. And that, broadly speaking, means anything that we have that is not in a book form. So we may have actual manuscript or handwritten documents like letters and diaries. We may have printed material that isn't bound. We might have records, official records of the college or other organizations. We have records of student groups. We have records of former faculty members. So we have all sorts of material, and not all of it relates to Augustana, but a great deal of it does. And then of the portion that does not relate directly to Augustana, a lot of it relates to the Quad Cities or the Upper Mississippi Valley region.
Well, that means, Roald, that you have a special record down there.
I have a special record down
there. The NSA is going to be on that.
Well, I think Rock Island Lines, some are down there.
Oh, really?
That's very true.
Yep.
Is that where Genesius Gill stuff?
Yes, it is.
Okay. How do I get at it?
That's an excellent question. So Special Collections is open to the public, so anybody can walk into our reading room from Monday through Thursday, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. And the reason the hours are so limited is simply a matter of staffing. I'm the only full-time librarian who works in that part of the library. And so I only have support staff and student workers available Monday through Thursday in the afternoons.
Mm-hmm. Suppose you want to get in there to see something. You know, how many forms of identification do you have to have?
None, actually. We will ask you to fill out a patron registration card, so we'll ask you for some basic contact information, but we basically function on the honor system. Mm-hmm. So anyone is welcome to come in. They are welcome to use our materials for any purpose, but our materials do not circulate. So we have what's called a closed stacks facility. The books and the manuscript materials are stored behind locked doors in an area that only Special Collections staff have access to. And the patrons come in to the reading room where they fill out a request form. So you would come in, fill out the form, hand it over to a staff person, and the staff person will go in the back and retrieve whatever materials you've asked to see.
Mm-hmm. So you can't take anything out of there at all.
That's correct.
Well, so much for that.
Do you have a material that still has never been cataloged? I
mean, we do.
A backlog of?
Yes, we do.
So you have more than you think you have, right?
That's very true. And it makes it a challenge for me, but it also provides a little bit of job security.
I'm not through yet. Don't fire me.
It's partly a result of there is always too much work and not enough time, but also we are constantly receiving new material. So the backlog is a combination of books and documents that we've owned for a long time that we've never quite gotten around to cataloging, and the incoming material that now needs to be cataloged and added to the collection.
How do you handle incoming material that you really did not want? And I'm sure you get some, right? Old libraries from retired pastors and things like that?
We do. We try to have a conversation with the potential donor whenever possible. In an ideal world, somebody who had material that they thought we might be interested in would come and talk to me. And we would discuss the nature of the material, the condition of the material, the way in which the material might or might not fit into our collection. We have a collection development policy, and so that is the document that I go back to time and time again to drive my decisions. We have very limited space, so that's always part of the conversation. And frequently, if somebody is offering me material that doesn't quite fit within our collection development policy, I can often redirect the potential donor to another institution, possibly a library, possibly a museum, possibly a local history society that might be a better fit. Because at the end of the day, it's not that I don't think the materials are worth saving. In most cases, it's that I don't think that those materials would be best used in our collection.
Who most uses the special collections? Do students use it a lot, or
yes,
faculty, or outsiders like Don Wooten?
Well, I've only been here for a year and a half.
Okay.
So in my time, I would say it is the students who use the collections most heavily, and that's often driven by class visits. So I work very closely with other members of the faculty in a variety of departments. We plan lessons that use our materials but fit within the subject matter of their course. And they'll bring a class in, and very often there's an assignment that needs to be completed or some sort of research that needs to continue beyond that one class visit. And so those students will come back in and request materials and work independently. I also get a surprising number of, well, I suppose not that surprising, but I'm very pleased to see this many students coming in to research on their own outside of their coursework, various student groups or different aspects of the college's history. And that might be because they are personally interested in something, or they belong to a particular group, or they're planning for some sort of event and they need background information. And we, of course, hold the history of the college within our collections, and I can help connect students with the questions to the materials that might hold the answers to those questions.
You know, when the library accessed the Genesee Skilled Records, I paid no attention to it, because Anna was a longtime guild member since birth, really, and handled everything, and bundles of stuff would go into the garbage, and bundles of stuff would go to Augie, and I was not sure what was going on. But then it occurred to me, suppose I need some of that material. The only way you could access it is to copy it, right?
Well, you could come look at it in person, and then if you needed a copy for yourself to refer back to, then yes, the only way to access it would be to make a copy.
I assume you have a bunch of pictures over there?
We do.
Okay, that explains that.
There's no excuse now. People have been trying to get him to write the history of the Genesee Skilled for
go
years.
Go away.
And there's you know where the material is now, and you can do it.
And there is a long history of people coming and doing research in special collections and then writing books based on that research.
That's where Treadway spent all this time working on the book for Bergenthal.
Yes, and Ann Bowden as well.
I have to say that there are 91 boxes of Bergendorf records in the special collections. And in the 5-foot shelf reserved for Treadway, there's a folder with three items in it.
Well, we have a bit more than one folder now, but we do wish that we had a more complete
You somehow
record
squeezed
from that
it out
period.
Of him then, because he must have known something that about what people do to history.
But surely there is a physical limit as to what you can have in special collections.
Yes, there is.
And do you ever reach a time when you think, okay, we're full, now we better think about getting rid of something? that, you know, that is the thing that a thought that when I first heard about it terrified me. Libraries get rid of books? They get rid of things? Wait a minute.
Libraries do get rid of books all the time. However, archives and special collections tend not to get rid of things as easily as, say, a circulating library collection.
Have you, in fact, ever gotten rid of something?
In my time here, my 1.5 years, no, I have not. Do I anticipate needing to do so at some point? Possibly. So right now, we do still have a little bit of capacity left for growth. However, I guarantee you that at some point we will hit that limit and will no longer be able to add materials to the collection without acquiring a larger space or redesigning the space. Although our space is used very efficiently because we have compact shelving units that move. And so you can fit more shelves in one space with movable shelving than you can with non-movable shelving. So how would I handle that? I would go back to my collection development policy. I would review all of the materials that we hold. If we needed to reprioritize and shift where the focus was, we would do that at that point. However, one of my jobs is to preserve for the long term the documents that tell the story of this college. So it is highly unlikely that I would ever deaccession material that is connected directly to the college or material that was donated to us with a very clear set of documentation as to its origin. Where we might possibly be able to trim a little bit is if we have extra copies of certain things, which in many cases we hold more than one copy. So that would be one way to shrink the collection without losing access to the content of those materials.
In addition to history of the college, what kind of special collections do you have?
We have some really spectacular books in our rare book collection. And the one that tends to get lots of people excited is a leaf from a Gutenberg Bible, which for those who aren't up to speed on the history of printing in the Western world, the Gutenberg Bible is widely accepted as the first complete book printed in the Western world with movable metal type on a printing press. That was in about 1450. And we have not a complete Gutenberg Bible, but one leaf from a Gutenberg Bible, and that is one of our treasures. I do need to say, however, that the Gutenberg Bible was not the first book printed with movable type. That actually happened several centuries earlier in China.
That's it. That's where always get aced out by somebody. Suppose you decided one day, why have we got all this stuff about this Genesius Guild? Why don't we offload it? What would you do with it then?
If we ever did get to that point, and I hope that we never do, because maintaining a record of not just the college, but the local community and the activities that were taking place in our local community is part of my mission. But if we did get to that point, it wouldn't go in the garbage bin. What would happen is we would then reach out to whomever is currently alive and available to us as a point of contact. If it's a group that still exists, so say it's the Genesius Guild, and say the Genesius Guild is still in existence and it's, say, 75 years from now, then we would reach out to the leadership of that group and explain the situation and ask if they have any interest in having the material back or if they have any suggestions for other repositories that might be a more appropriate home for the materials.
You do have also, I know, a spectacular collection of John Hauberg materials.
Yes, we do.
Including glass plate.
We do. That is
slides, negatives.
Quite possibly the most heavily used of our manuscript collections would be the Hauberg collection. And it's a treasure trove of information about the history of Rock Island and the history of the Quad Cities area. And it is fascinating. And the glass plate images, I was just writing a brief article last week about the care and preservation of glass plate images, because we do have quite a large collection for a relatively small college.
One of the things you have there, and this is to signal anybody out there that might like to come over and use your collection and do an article. Very few people know that Rock Island had a settlement house.
Yes.
During the settlement house movement.
The West End settlement.
The West End settlement by John Halberg and his wife, Suzanne Denkman. And there are many, many glass plates of women and children in their white uniforms out in the gardens.
It's fascinating. And in fact, I was using those materials last fall to design a lesson plan for a course in social work. And it was a course on the history of social work. And of course, they do readings about the settlement houses that were developed in New York City and Chicago.
Right.
But their professor brought them in to special collections so that they could learn that, in fact, there was a settlement house here. And it's one of the few examples of a settlement house in a smaller urban setting.
Yeah, somebody, I think, needs to write that story. What about you? Do you write anything based on
special collections?
No interest? It's not a
lack of interest. I think I've already, in just a year and a half, not uncovered, certainly folks before me knew these stories, but discovered for myself many fascinating stories. The issue is time, and I am not paid by the college to write about the college. I am paid by the college to manage these collections and to teach, and so that is what I do, but maybe someday.
So do you teach courses too?
I don't teach entire courses.
Okay.
I am a member of the faculty, but I am not a professor. And I work together with professors who are teaching courses. And we usually design anywhere from one to maybe three visits over the course of a term. And during those visits, we might be looking at material on local history, we might be looking at material on Augustana's history, we might be looking at materials that reflect the history of printing. I've had at least one music class visit. I've had a math professor bring classes in. So it's really a broad range of subject matter.
Do you collect music?
We have some music in the collection.
What qualifies music to be in a special collection?
Well, for instance, we have recordings of Augustana's own musical groups over time. We have some sheet music that reflects various aspects of our national cultural heritage and local Quad Cities cultural heritage. We have, I believe, a manuscript of a piece of music that was commissioned by the college. The name of it escapes me. It was over a year ago that I pulled that for a class to look at. But in that case, it was a very useful document for the students to see because it reflected the creative process mm-hmm. of composition.
I asked that because I have a manuscript of a score. No, that's right. I finally, last year, sent the original back to the composer who had given it to me, but I made a copy. And I thought it should go to Knox College because that's where he worked.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was kind of startling to rummage around the attic, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I've got the original manuscript of this piece of music.
And what you've just described is the mechanism by which we come to own many interesting documents. Mm-hmm. Often it is somebody cleaning out their attic or their basement, or somebody preparing to move, or sadly, it's often someone in the family has passed away. And if no one in the family is interested in retaining certain materials, but they aren't quite ready to throw them away, that's when we might get a phone call.
Emma, would you and your staff like to clean out my attic and basement and take whatever you want?
Maybe we should talk off the air about that.
I need to get that done.
I've just met you before this recording because you're relatively new at Augie, and I don't get over there much anymore. How did you end up at Augustana?
Well, that's a very long story.
Well, we have time.
I suppose I could start with how I became a librarian because that's part of it. And my mother is a librarian. And my great-grandmother was also a librarian, and my neighbors on both sides, when I was growing up, were also librarians.
You had no escape.
So to some extent, it might have been fate. But I didn't actually decide that that was the right path for me until several years after I finished college. So I attended a small liberal arts college, not Augustana, but a school quite similar in New England. And I was an Asian studies major. And at the time, librarianship was really not on my radar, despite having many examples of people who had satisfying and interesting careers all around me in this field. And after several years of post-college exploration, I walked into the library on the campus of Stanford University, because that's where I was working at the time, and instantly my body relaxed, and I felt calm. And that's when I started thinking, well, gee, how do I get a job here? And that's when I realized that, indeed, I would need to go back to school and get a master's degree accredited by the American Library Association to qualify for a professional job in a library. Certainly, you can work in libraries without a master's degree, but to be a librarian, you do need to have that degree.
Had you always been a reader and loved books
yes.
and things like
yes,
that?
Yes, of course, yes.
Yeah.
I was a voracious reader as a child, and I would sometimes get in trouble for that. But so I then returned to my home, which is in Maryland. That's where I grew up. And in order to prepare for graduate school, I did some internships at the National Archives and Records Administration and at the Smithsonian, because I decided I wanted to focus on preservation. And preservation is a small subfield of librarianship. And at the time, there was one program, really, that that would adequately prepare you for that specialty. And for the best chances of being accepted into that program, I did these pre-program internships, which were fascinating. And after that, I went off to the University of Texas at Austin. And 2 years later, I had my degree in hand, as well as a certificate of advanced study in the preservation of library and archival materials. Mm-hmm. Following that, I moved to Illinois. And first I landed in Champaign-Urbana. And that was my first time living in this great state. And I was very proud to have a license plate that says Land of Lincoln. That was very exciting for me, since that is my last name. And I was there for a couple of years before I moved on to the Library of Congress. And I was there for about a year, all this time doing preservation-related work. So first at the University of Illinois, I was the media preservation coordinator focusing on audiovisual materials. And then at the Library of Congress, I was the preservation education specialist focusing on the educational angle, teaching people within and without the institution about preservation. And then I decided to become a farmer. Because why not?
Yeah, why not? I mean, that's what I keep saying. Why not?
Why not?
Why not be
it
a
was
farmer?
Actually
just what I thought I had you figured out.
It was that decision was in many ways driven by reading, by voracious reading on the topic of food and food production in our country and the history of food and farming. And my husband and I decided that we, at that point in our lives, would like to pursue something different that would have us outdoors and in nature and working with each other. And farming certainly accomplished all of those goals, but it did not provide a very adequate stream of income. And so
that's the first thing about farming.
Well,
you should
yes.
know.
But we had a fantastic time, and we farmed in central Illinois in a very rural area, and we sold our wares in the Chicago area, and we did that for, all together, we farmed for 7 years. Just the two of us. We didn't have any farmhands, and we don't have any children, and we raised vegetables, organic vegetables, and a variety of pasture-based livestock, and we learned a lot from our elderly neighbor who was in his 90s at the time and could remember the days of farming with horses. And we tested ourselves in many, many ways. But the income. We were covering our expenses, but we weren't paying ourselves for our time. And there's only so long that you can continue to do that. So I brushed off my degree and found myself what library work I could find, which was difficult because we were living in the middle of nowhere. And I ended up at the University of St. Francis, which is in Joliet. So I worked there part-time for, maybe a year and a half. And then I started to look for full-time employment with the idea that we had downsized the farm enough that we might be able to then move off the farm. And I happened to have a friend whose son was a student at Augustana, and he had come from a very small rural town, and I saw him blossom here. And it was a school that had not been on my radar at all, but I knew that he was having a wonderful experience here. So I felt very confident in applying for that job. And the fact that I went to a small liberal arts college, and this is a small liberal arts college, and I was third generation at my college, and I know that here at Augustana there are many families that have sent students for multiple generations. So I understand that deep love of place and love of institution. And in my job, I am in contact with alumni frequently. So I think that helps that I can identify with that same feeling, even if I personally am not as deeply connected to Augustana.
Well, you sound like a great acquisition for the
college. Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you.
I love it, an acquisition. That's what libraries do. They acquire, don't they?
I minored in library science in college. I was going to be, and then I got to the University of Chicago and started using the rare book room, and that was heaven.
It is.
What's this watermark mean? Is it before or after 1400? How wide are the lines, you know, in this paper? Couldn't have been done before. And it would be playing detective without having to solve murders.
I often use that word with our students in describing the work that I do and the work that they will be doing, is that it's detective work, and we are looking for clues, and we are weaving those clues together. And sometimes clues are missing because that's the nature of the record that we have. But I was fortunate enough to do a practicum at the University of Chicago Library when I was in graduate school, not in their rare book room, but working with their East Asian collection. And that is a phenomenal institution.
I had a great time there.
Okay, give us again the hours of the special collections.
The special collections reading room is open from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock from Monday through Thursday.
And where is it located?
It's located in the first floor of the library, so that's down on what feels like the basement, but is actually the first floor. And the library is inside of the Gerber Center for Student Life on the Augustana campus.
Okay, so we know where to find you, Emma. And if I have to find those missing pictures for the Genesius Guild, I know where to go. But thank you very much
for
taking time to come over. And you have made this sound like the most fascinating place in the world. So special collections here at Augustana College. And our specialty right now is heading for the exit. We want to thank Emma Lincoln, who's in charge of special collections at Augustana College. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back next week, and we hope you'll join us for the next edition of Book Bag. No, that's not it. What is it called?
Scribble.
Oh, yes. I knew it had a name.